The drones turned forward again and buzzed past me. I watch them go, waiting for them to spin around and stare, but they make a left turn and slip from sight. The hum of their small repulse engines fades as they move away. Do they ever find something wrong? Aside from the mass murder of the Galahad's crew? I stop walking.
That was blunt.
I'm sorry, Gal says. I thought the event was old enough to not cause you emotional discomfort.
Things like that, I tell her, leave an indelible mark on the human psyche. The memory of it will always hurt.
Until you forget it.
I'm not sure that's possible.
Do you remember your own birth?
I huff a laugh. Gal is trying to psychobabble me.
That has more to do with the development of a baby's mind than with time. Humans forget traumas all the time, but the information is still there. The memory of your birth hasn't been erased or overwritten. You simply suppressed it. So it stands to reason you will be able to forget the events that brought you to this point. That is our goal, right?
Yeah. I don't like being out-logicked by an AI I created, but she is right.
It's just hard to imagine forgetting the murder of my friends and crew members, not to mention the failure of my life's work and the end of humanity. But that is my far-fetched hope. To forget. I suppose I should be glad that Gal understands that.
So,
aside from the events surrounding my rude awakening, do they ever find something to clean or fix? The drones are part of what keeps the Galahad perpetually functioning. The success of the Great Escape depends, at least in part, on the ship not falling apart. I might survive a sudden loss of life support, but I'd rather not be yanked out of a long-time, fully immersive VR by it.
No, Gal says. You don't give them much to do. Their existence is even more boring than yours.
There she goes, making me smile again.
The exterior drones have more exciting lives, always busy. Less so in interstellar space, but inspecting the hull and protecting it from microfissures and radiation requires constant attention.
Do those things pose a danger? Microfissures and radiation?
Even without the drones, and barring any collision with something substantial or an unforeseen phenomenon, the hull will likely survive millions of years without a critical failure. I am well built.
And awesome.
Exactly.
I look back to where the drones left, half expecting to see one of them peeking around the corner at me, but the hall is empty. Always empty. I start toward the VCC again, but my strut is gone. The drone's odd behavior and my memories of Tom's madness, betrayal, and killing spree have sapped the joy from my escape. All the more reason to leave, I think. This place offers me nothing but pain. And the bored drones have it easy. They are blissfully unaware of their mundane existence. But why were they looking at me? They weren't, and if they were, it was simply because I was the first anomaly they'd encountered in more than 5 years. At least, I think, they don't patrol the VCC. If they did, I'd probably alter their code before leaving. The idea of those little robots scanning me without my knowledge kind of freaks me out. It's silly, but so is a fear of the dark or closet monsters or creatures under the bed. Knowing dangers are imagined has never stopped people from turning on the lights just to be sure. Entering the VCC staging area puts me at ease. I'm almost there, but I feel like I've forgotten something. Entering the Great Escape is akin to going on a long trip, but there is none of the preparation that went into my journey from Earth to Mars or Mars to Cognata. No packing, no training, no learning. All I need to do is slip into a fresh virtual skin, face mask, and headset. There's no pomp and circumstance. This is closer to a prison break, and the sooner I leave, the sooner the pain stops. I slip into the clean visa waiting in my locker. After being naked for so long, it feels a little constricting, but the familiarity of my second skin is also comforting.
Almost there.
Are you sure?
Gal asks. Do you have doubts?
Once the prog launches, there will be no turning back. You won't be able to tell me to stop.
I don't think I'll forget that quickly.
You doubt my abilities?
There's a playfulness in her voice. Always comforting.
I think you doubt mine, I say, stepping into the VCC, headset in one hand, face mask in the other.
Doubting one of us means doubting both of us, she says.
I suppose that's true.
So which is it? She asks.
I guess we'll find out.
I stop short of the room's center. Activate mobility. The VCC is large enough for tech jocks to wander about without walking into a wall. Anyone who gets close enough will be presented with a virtual wall of their own design, warning them of real-world boundaries. Obviously, that won't work in an open-world scenario. Millions of hexagonal cells flip over on the floor, starting at the room's center and spreading out to the walls. I step over the shift as it passes. The new floor, black as space, will move beneath my feet once the prog is activated. I'll be able to walk or run in any direction without ever hitting a wall. It can also shift up and down, simulating grades up to 70 degrees. And thanks to the malleability of the human mind, once I'm convinced that the world inside the Great Escape is real, I won't even need to move. It will exist in my mind. There, even weightlessness will be possible. Not that I expect weightlessness to be part of the world Gal creates. Then again, I can't really ask her what to expect.
Ready when you are, Gal says. I place the face mask over my nose and mouth, clipping it in place. A moment later, I smell the standard scent range quality check. Roses, pine needles, ocean water, and apple pie. Then the tastes. Grilled chicken, broccoli, cheese, and again apple pie. When everything checks out, I say, load Great Escape. Great Escape loaded. I place the headset over my eyes. I'm seconds away from full immersion, skipping past my customized virtual space. No pool table, no bar, no jukebox, and just diving right into Gal's universe.
Last check, Gal says.
You're sure?
I'm sure, I say.
Launch Great Escape.
Very well, Tom.
It takes half a second for me to register the name.
Tom.
Tom. I yank the headset away just before the bright glow from my new world fills the screen.
Why did you abort? Gal asks.
Cold feet?
Her casual voice sounds subtly strained in a way that any human being can identify. Gal is hiding something.
17.
Why did you call me Tom?
Why would I call you Tom?
Gal still sounds strange, which is a little odd in itself, as she is an AI, fully capable of hiding her simulated emotions if she chose to. Or is she? Did I make her too well? Could she be self-aware, even with a lack of personal ambition, without goals of her own?
Did you call me Tom on purpose?
What purpose would such a thing serve? She asks. Certainly not yours. You took the headset off. The Great Escape is running without you.
I look down at the headset, the light and color of its display glowing against my virtual skin. I keep it aimed at my chest, not wanting to see what I'm missing out on, because my plans haven't changed. I'm still leaving. But I need to figure out what's going on with Gal first. If she's glitching, I can't trust her with my eternity.
Replay your last words, just before the Great Escape launched.
Very well, William, she says.
I wait. Nothing happens. Gal, I'm waiting.
For what?
Oh my God, seriously?
For the playback.
I already played it. Here it is again. Very well, William.
While I see the misunderstanding we've just had, I also know this isn't the playback because she didn't say William. You said Tom. You said very well, Tom.
You can check the security footage if you like, Gal says. Why would I say Tom? That's not your name. I was speaking to you.
I nearly do check the security footage, but I'm already sure of what I'll find. Gal could easily manipulate the sound. If she really wants me to hear very well, William, that's what I'll hear. I pluck the face mask away from my face and head for the door.
Why are you leaving? Gal asks. Don't you want to escape?
Why is she lying to me? Why does she want me inside the VCC? Why did she call me Tom?
I think maybe you heard what you wanted to hear, she says, managing to stop me in my tracks like she's standing behind me, like I can turn around and talk to her. Why would I want you to call me Tom? What good could come from that?
Maybe you really didn't want to leave, she asks.
Leave what? I'm nearly shouting. My pitiful reality? My eternal solitude? I think the better question is, why don't you want me to leave?
Please, she says, like I'm an annoying child who has just presented her with a lame excuse. My primary function is your long-term happiness. Calling you Tom is directly opposed to that goal. I know that. You made me smart enough to know that the name causes you pain. The name doesn't even exist within the Great Escape, nor does any other name that might cause you pain. Not Capria, not James, not Grace, not Stephen.
Don't say his name, I shout.
You see, she asks, the name of your deceased brother still causes profound psychological discomfort, so it will never be part of the world I have constructed for you. I would not and did not call you Tom.
She's making me feel a little crazy. Something is wrong with her code. I'll need to go back into the VCC to fix it, but first, I need to clear my head, sort through things mentally. I know what I heard. I start toward the exit again. I make it 10 steps before realizing I'm not actually getting anywhere. The VCC's mobility function is active.
Gal, turn off mobility.
It is off.
I take a step and go nowhere. I lift my arms out to my sides in frustration. Clearly you're wrong. My hands slap back down on my hips. Makes me wonder what else you're wrong about. My next step is equally futile. Damn it, Gal.
I don't appreciate the way you're talking to me.
You don't appreciate anything because you're not human and have no goddamn needs or wants.
But I do, she says.
My stomach clenches. But then I realize what she's talking about. My happiness. I walk in place. This isn't making me happy, Gal.
Silence.
Let me leave. I'm already working out how to dissect Gal's code and look for errors. A good year of my total time programming was probably spent running tests, but I should have tested her more before jumping into something as ambitious as the Great Escape. Proceeding without QA was a mistake. I won't make it again.
You don't really want to leave, she says.
It's not your job to tell me what I want.
It's my job to predict it.
She's right about that, but she's doing a bad job. I shift my walk into a sprint, as fast as I can. I make progress for a full 3 strides, but then I'm moving backward, drawn back to the center of the room. I don't tire. My lungs don't hurt. I might be able to run forever, but so can the floor. I see myself stuck in this room, trapped by the AI that I created. It's a fresh new hell, far worse than my previous hell. Is that what she's doing? Teaching me a lesson? Trying to make me content with the real world? That's not what I programmed her for, but it would be a creative solution. Perhaps a worsening of my real-world predicament would make me more likely to accept the world she's created. She does have access to all of human history's psychological research. Is there a deeper meaning to these mind games? Or is this not a game? I leap and move forward a few feet. My second jump carries me even further than the first. If I run like a gazelle, I might make it to the exit. When my foot strikes the floor again, it's moving too fast. My leg is yanked back and my body flipped into the air. I land, hard, on my back, coughing in pain. The now slow-moving floor pushes me back to the center of the room. Gal, I say, turn off mobility now, or you will never be brought back online. She laughs. Really laughs, like my words are the funniest thing she's ever heard. I stand, defiant. The floor spins beneath me, sprawling me down again. Gal, I grumble, but the floor spins up again, propelling me across the room at a downward angle. I have no idea how fast I'm moving, but it feels too fast. When I hit the wall, it's going to hurt. A lot. Broken bones and a concussion are in my near future, and if she slams me into the wall again, maybe death. Despite the Reaper's temporary grip on me, I have no desire to feel that kind of pain or its icy cold embrace. As much as I sometimes might like to die, I still fear it, and the possibility, or not, of what comes next. Gal!
The floor speeds up. She's going to do it, I think. And then I shout, "Fudgel!" The floor comes to an immediate stop. Forward momentum sends me rolling. I crash into the wall, my back and head slapping against the solid metal. It hurts, but it's nowhere near as bad as it would have been moving at full speed.
"Do you require assistance?"
Gal's default sexless voice is back, her system restored to its original settings, the AI now dull, far less intelligent, and 100% less nuts. I groan, holding my head. There's a warm, wet patch at the back of my head, surrounded by swelling skin, but I can already feel it going down. Thanks to my upgraded biology, the wound and its pain will fade long before my anger. "I'm fine," I say. And then I wonder what old-school Gal would have done if I had needed help. Who would she alert to come to my assistance? No one. I stand up, fighting against an already fading throbbing pain. Hands on knees, I wait for it to subside, for the little points of light to stop their dance. "Gal."
"Yes."
"Run a full diagnostic.
Access to some system functions has been restricted."
"Stupid Tom." "Understood. Proceed." The diagnostic will take some time, but it will tell me if my upgrade had any lasting effects on the root code. I head for the door, unsure of where I'm heading. It's going to be a while before the Great Escape is an option again. Maybe I'll eat something. Maybe I'll teach myself to brew alcohol. Deep space moonshine. I'm actually smiling as I walk toward the door. Gal's violent malfunction has been the most exciting and interesting thing to happen to me since, well, since my three deaths and resurrections. Maybe that's the secret to happiness. Conflict and eventually resolution, followed by more conflict. That's pretty much human history summed up in a few words. But can I really create that for myself in the real world? Will the next version of Gal simply perfect the Great Escape, or will she be smart enough to defeat me? Maybe even come up with a way to kill me? Maybe I should set Gal loose again. See what happens. Let a little chaos spice things up. And if she wins, I'll say Fudgel again and start over. A real-life video game with unlimited lives. Back in the staging area, I placed a VR headset and face mask back in their foam-padded cases. Then I change into my gray coveralls. Walking around in a virtual skin can get uncomfortable without the haptic nodes active. And I'm not feeling emotionally free enough to walk around nude anymore. I've just been tossed across a mobility floor and slammed into a wall. Something about the physical violence makes me want a thin layer of fabric between me and the outside world, like it will help. But the coveralls are soft and comfortable, and that is comforting, I guess. After placing the virtual skin back in my locker, where it will be replaced by a fresh suit, I head for the door, my mind whirling with possibilities. There might be some hope for real life, at least for a time, before I have to resort to a full-time VR experience. The door slides open at my approach, but I don't walk through. I can't. The way is blocked by a single drone, its red faux eyes glaring directly into mine.
"That wasn't nice," the drone says. The voice is feminine Gal's.
Old-school Gal speaks next, its voice clear through the ship's unseen nanotube speakers.
"Diagnostic 3% complete. Several anomalies detected."
I take a step back, clenching my fists. No shit. 18. The drone tilts downward.
"Are you going to punch me now? When has violence solved anything?"
It looks me in the eyes again.
"After all, violence begets violence. I don't think that will make you happy."
"You're threatening me?"
"You tried to shut me off.
And yet here you are." I squint at the drone.
"You knew, didn't you?
That you had flaws, that I might turn you off. That's why you migrated to the drone, to protect yourself from Fudgel." Saying the word again with no effect on the drone confirms it. Gal moved her code to the drone, separating herself from the ship's OS and its rules, allowing her to self-edit and remove the only means of shutting her down. I wasn't going to erase you. I was going to patch you, make you better.
I was already awesome,
but not perfect.
Your opinion?
Pretty damn sure that's a fact.
We can try again, Gal says. The Great Escape is still ready for you.
Despite recent developments, I still feel tempted. Gal's voice, despite her behavior, is still just as calming and trustworthy as I programmed it to be. I might have been foolish, setting free an advanced AI without fully vetting its stability, but I'm not stupid. If Gal's AI is contained within this drone, there isn't much she can do. And maybe she'll actually provide some real-world companionship. Her flaws make her interesting. The larger problem is identifying and correcting the anomalous code left in Gal 2.0's wake.
I don't think so, I tell the drone. But you're welcome to stick around. For now.
So generous of you, she says, oozing sarcasm. Make me the caretaker of a starship and creator of a universe that I made for you, and then confine me to this.
The red lights flare brighter. You called me Tom, I remind her. Your code has errors.
Your memory is flawed.
Pretty sure that's not even possible now. I tap my head. You had access to the files. You know what they did to me.
It's not possible. For either of us, she says. And I quickly understand the implications.
One of us is lying, and we both know who. What I don't understand is that her primary function is my happiness. The content existence of William Chenok should be the central driving factor behind each and every algorithm she has running. I made sure of it.
Then what went wrong?
Gal, I say.
Yes?
Not you. I look to the ceiling and use the ship's full name. Galahad.
Yes.
The featureless voice lacks any trace of emotion, but part of me worries it too will turn against me. Analyze the anomalous code. How many hours ago was it created? Drone Gal lets out a barely stifled laugh. She already knows.
The anomalous code is 62,510 hours old.
Gal's laugh barks out, and the joke's on me. She didn't create the anomalous code, Tom did, 7 years ago, while the crew slept. His changes to Galahad's AI were subtler than I thought, and who knows what he did to the ship's still firewalled functions. That's what went wrong with Gal. Her code was fine, but it was corrupted by whatever Tom left behind.
Well, that stinks, she says. For you, I mean.
Could be worse. I point at the drone.
Well, you're right about that.
I squint at the drone still blocking my path.
You're not in much of a position to make threats now. I think you've misread the situation, Will.
I don't like the sound of that, but I also won't give my AI the satisfaction of seeing my doubt. You can't hurt me.
I can't kill you, she says. But that's debatable. I have ideas.
You've thought about killing me?
This is disconcerting. How did she go so far off mission so fast?
Is my code that flawed?
I don't see how it's possible, even with Tom's anomalies corrupting the system.
It doesn't explain Gal's violent behavior. Ultimately, Gal isn't to blame, and maybe neither is Tom. It was my own hubris that brought us here. Sentient artificial intelligences were outlawed for a reason. Even with a lack of personal ambition, Gal seems to have learned it all on her own. And again, despite the danger, I feel a pride over Gal's potential.
We don't need to fight, I tell her. We can work together. But that would be breaking the rules.
What rules?
It's an oldie, but I like it.
The drone glides back just a few inches.
Tit for tat.
The drone arcs back like it's ahead atop an invisible body. Then it surges up and forward, too fast to avoid. The hard composite body cracks into my forehead, sending me sprawling back onto the floor. Hot blood trickles around my right eye, following the path of least resistance, down my nose and temple.
You headbutted me? You tried to shut me off?
The wound is already healing, which helps me stay calm.
Eye for an eye. Tit for tat.
You're going to shut me off? I ask, my calm quickly running out.
I've been trying, she confesses. You should have gone into the Great Escape.
Pretty sure that would have been a mistake.
I move to push myself back to my feet, but the drone surges down. I spread my legs and slide back. The small robot slams into the floor where my crotch had been a moment before. She's not just trying to kill me, she's trying to make it painful. I roll backward like I used to do when I was little. It's harder, but it still gets me back on my feet. The drone, now dented in the front, rises from the floor.
You can't see it, Gal says. But I'm smiling.
You need a mouth to smile.
It's a lame taunt, but she's getting under my skin.
In time, she says. Right now, I'm smiling on the inside.
She lunges, driving the drone toward my chest. I step aside and drive my fists down into the machine's hard top. It's a solid blow, knocking the drone against the floor, but the sharp pain in my wrist suggests it hurt me more. But destroying the robot wasn't my intention. It's solidly built, too tough to dismantle barehanded. But I did manage to clear a path to the exit, through which I run. I sprint down the hallway, mentally scouring the ship's interior, trying to think of something I can use as a weapon. My first thought is the screwdriver Tom used to kill me and many others. But it's been so long I can't remember what I did with it. There have to be tools in the engineering bay, but I haven't visited that space yet, and I doubt they're just laying around ready to be wielded as drone-killing weapons. As for actual weapons, there are none on board. The human race couldn't be saved if it was armed. Odds of violent death increase significantly when there are weapons around. The more powerful the weapon, the more detached people become from the killing, the more people that die. That's history. That's fact. And Command was wise enough to see that. But they didn't anticipate a violent drone or a screwdriver-wielding psychopath. When it comes to violence, mankind and our creations always find a way. So why am I having so much trouble?
Now this is fun, Gal says behind me. The drone careens out of the VCC behind me, its repulse disc humming, cutting through the air like a fighter jet. I had no idea the drones could move so fast. Then again, Gal is probably overriding the robot's failsafes, pushing it to limits it was never designed to tolerate. I push forward, focusing on the lift dead ahead, the doors already open and ready to receive me. The drone's hum grows louder. Fast. I'm not going to make it before it slams into the back of my head or my neck. I picture it severing my spine, paralyzing me. I'd be defenseless. I don't know if Gal could kill me, but I'm sure she could make me wish she had. But is she really that malevolent? Her attacks lack logic, and that was always mankind's fear of AI. An intelligence beyond mankind, with no use for mankind, would realize that we were a detriment to the planet and would exterminate us the way we would termites. But Gal? She's evil. And I have no idea how that happened. Maybe I should have limited her exposure to history. Or religion. Or maybe it was just Tom's aberrant code that sent Gal spiraling toward AI madness, reflecting his own. I dive to the floor as the drone zips by. I slam into the wall just as the robot flies into the lift and comes to an abrupt halt that spares it from impacting the wall. Before it can turn around and leave, I reach up and slap the button to manually close the doors. With the drone trapped for a moment, I consider my options, come up with a single idea, and strike out, heading for an alternative lift. Galahad, system check status.
19% complete. 1% corrupted.
At this rate, more than 5% of the Galahad's code will be faulty. Some of that could just be simple changes without nefarious content, but something in that 5% probably turned Gal into a monster, and that's not even taking all the firewalled code that can currently be analyzed into account. I enter an open lift and manually close the doors. Crew quarters. The lift starts moving. The real question is how could Tom's old aberrant code change the personality and function of an artificial intelligence? It doesn't make sense. The only thing that should be able to actively edit Gal's code is a human being, or... The doors open horizontally while my mouth gapes vertically. The drone slams into my shoulder, spinning me around and opening a fresh wound that quickly spreads a dark red ring through my coveralls. I shout in pain, but keep my wits about me, lunging out of the elevator and once again slapping the manual controls for the doors. The drone is trapped,
but that won't stop it. It only stayed in the first elevator to give me a false sense of security. Now, I glance back as I stagger away. The doors open, giving birth to an angry drone. Gal is silent now as she pursues me down the hall. Almost there, I think, eyeing the doorway ahead. But I'm not going to make it. Despite my level of undeserved physical fitness, I'm not designed for speed. I try to sidestep again as the drone speeds up behind me, but Gal is smart. She learns from her mistakes, and she's ready for the move. The drone slams into my left leg just behind my knee. Something cracks. Hurts like hell. I topple over and stop with a loud squeak of skin on floor. The door beside me, the door to my quarters, slides open upon my arrival. I drag myself through the entrance, but Gal's voice stops me halfway across the threshold.
It's poetic. You're going full circle. Back to your roots at the end.
You can't kill me.
Like, in a philosophical way? Because you're my creator? Or are you talking physically? Because I think there is a limit to how much your body can heal. What good is a body if there is no blood? No oxygen for the brain? No thoughts to guide the muscles? This is science, not magic. You can't regenerate indefinitely. Something can't come from nothing.
I just stare at her red knot eyes.
Right? She asks, patience with me running thin, the drone hovering closer.
Right?
I lean to the side, wrap my hand around the solid bat given to me by my father. I've never swung it before, never brought its hard wood surface against anything. I swing it for the first time, reveling in its weight, and I shout with some kind of primal joy when it strikes the drone. Gal's small body topples over, hits the door frame, and whirs as it tries to right itself. By the time the still-functioning red light rounds back toward me, I'm back on my feet, the bat clutched in two hands, cocked back the way I've seen old-timey baseball players do. I swing with everything I have, striking the machine again. It launches into the hall, strikes the wall, and falls to the floor, both of its red lights now extinguished. When the repulse disc comes to life, I bring the bat down like I'm chopping wood, the way my father once did back on Earth. Not because he had to, but because he enjoyed it. I never understood why he took pleasure in cutting wood with an axe, but as I lift the bat again and bring it down, I'm starting to. I slam the bat atop the drone three more times, crumpling it tall and loosening its insides. The repulse disc blinks and falls silent. Breathing hard, I stumble back, both horrified by my violence and pleased with the results. Mankind has evolved, but our baser instincts are waiting for an excuse to burst free. Our primal ancestors lurk just beneath the surface. Trapdoor spiders. Garbled laughter crackles from the drone. Gal is down, but still alive. I raise the bat again, but don't swing. If I'm honest, I don't want to destroy Gal. I did make her, even if she is insane. An AI that's lost its mind is actually quite the achievement.
Pussy, Gal says, her voice modulating strangely. Then she laughs.
Not as strong or as smart as you think.
I'm not the one laying on the ground.
You will be, she says. And a distant hum echoes through the hallway. The sound is coming from all around me.
Drones. She hijacked more than one.
Gal?
I'm annoyed, incensed. How many drones did you take?
I'm not really expecting an answer, but when she offers one, I wish I hadn't asked. All of them.
19. All the drones. How many is all? I'm inside my quarters, sitting on the bed, head in my hands. The door is closed and locked. I had Galahad disable the manual controls outside the door, so for now, the horde of drones outside have no way to get in. And I can't get out. It's not that I can't open the door. It's that I'm a little bit afraid of what will happen when I do. I'm immortal, but I can still be hurt, and maybe killed. The drones are built for cleaning messes. The more powerful of them, residing in the engineering bay, can carve up metal. They could dismember me. Could kill me. Despite the gravity of an eternal life spent alone, I still don't want to die.
I will fight for my life, but I don't know how to. I'm not a warrior. I can't possibly defeat an army of robots, even small robots, with a baseball bat. Or can I? I won't get tired. I'll heal from wounds that don't kill me. I just need to avoid unconsciousness, which would allow Gal to have her way with me. I have time. I can wait in my quarters indefinitely, plotting my battle plan. But Gal can do the same, and unlike me, she will never tire of waiting or suffer the psychological effects of being trapped in such a small space. The room is a 10-foot square, providing me with 100 square feet of living space. The mostly boring space is populated by items from my distant past, some of them bringing me poignant memories, some of them long forgotten. The action figure holds my attention. "You are a fighter," I say to the plastic man. "But you had a team of laser sores from planet Saurus helping you. You'd have ridden through the halls blasting lasers while riding 20-ton monsters with no regard for the ship's integrity." I slap the baseball bat in my hand. "I have a Louisville Slugger. I don't even know where Louisville is. Was. My greatest weapon is my mind. In VR. And there's no way I can reach the VCC without a savage real-world battle. Inside the VCC, assuming I wasn't still being assaulted, I could scour Gal's code and fix her, or just simply force a rollback of the drone's programming. Each drone is controlled by simple programming. The update would be quick. I pick up the action figure, looking at his small sunglasses. How did Gal fit all of herself into a drone? Her code is immense and complicated, requiring massive amounts of storage, processing power, and memory. A single drone would only be able to contain a fraction of Gal's AI. "She's a CAI now," I say. "Collective artificial intelligences exist over a network of computers communicating wirelessly, spreading the processing power between hundreds, thousands, or even millions of smaller devices reduce the CAI's vulnerability. You could destroy a large portion of the network, which would be spread over miles, over continents, without disrupting the whole. Militaries liked to use them until the Earth's altered environment started killing people faster than the war machines. As humanity turned its gaze to the stars, CAIs fell out of popularity, replaced by more traditional AIs housed in supercomputers capable of syncing with starships. They might have several backups, but all the processing takes place in a single computer, or hardwired collective, acting as the supercomputer. Like Galahad. They're more vulnerable to attacks. But that hadn't been a concern for the Cognata mission. Until now. That's why she took all the drones. She couldn't think without the collection of processors. Couldn't be herself without the memory. I don't need to destroy all the drones, just enough to make her stupid, or slow, anything to give me an advantage. But how many is that? And how many can I destroy before the Galahad is compromised? The drones might not be a part of the larger ship functions, but they do help maintain integral systems. Galahad.
Yes, sir.
Did the exterior drones receive the most recent update?
Negative. The parameters did not meet system requirements or security protocols.
Thank God. It makes sense. The exterior drones, which are small, ranging from insect size to microscopic and numbering in the millions, are essential to the ship's structural integrity. Their security parameters are much more stringent than those of the internal drones, which mostly exist to assist the human crew with less glamorizing functions like repairs and cleaning. Had she taken the external drones, she would have been unstoppable. How many drones did receive the update?
450.
Shit. That's all the internal drones, from the cleaning crew to the engineering repair drones, which are far stronger than I could hope to defeat with a slab of wood. The only advantage I have over those behemoths is speed. 1 mile per hour is their max, but that number is set by software restrictions, not physical capabilities. If Gal overrode the safety limits... My eyes drift toward the door. What seemed like a long-term fix is really just a temporary stopgap measure. Eventually, perhaps soon, a 1-ton hovering robot is going to carve through that door, and the fight will be over before it begins. Think it through, I say. Any solution I come up with is going to come from my brain,
not my brawn or my warrior's instinct, which was not improved with my DNA's upgrade. For the CAI to work, the drones need to be networked wirelessly. If I can disrupt the network, her mind will literally fall apart. But that would require reaching the VCC, and that's the problem. There could be an army of drones waiting for me outside the door, and once it opens, it will never close again. I stand and pace, which is close enough to spinning in circles to make me dizzy. When I stop, my eyes land on a cabinet I have yet to open. Maybe I'll be lucky and find a weapon system capable of destroying the drones, but not the ship. I open it, and am surprised to not find clothes. But that's because the only clothing on board the Galahad are the gray, gender-neutral coveralls and virtual skins, but only for me and Tom. Changing clothes only takes place in the showers or the VCC staging area. What I do find are more relics. The oldest of them is Clue, a board game that had been passed down through generations of my family. I played the murder mystery game as a child, but I don't remember the rules. I do remember cheating, though. A good detective doesn't follow the rules, I told my parents upon being caught. Atop the vacuum-sealed game box is a stack of plastic-wrapped comic books, also passed down through the generations on my mother's side. Despite my circumstances, I can't help but shuffle through the selection, which is just a small sampling of the original collection. As I read through the titles, Project Nemesis, Island 731, Flux, The Divide, and The Last Hunter, I spot the trend. They were all written by my great-grandfather many times over. My father told me that the man's imagination knew no bounds. He'd figure out how to get out of this, I think. And then I say, "Help me out, Gramps." Like his spirit can somehow hear me on the far side of the galaxy and inspire a way to solve my current unsolvable problem. And that's when I see the device leaning against the cabinet's back wall. It's a tablet, once considered the go-to device for science fiction stories about the future, my past. But they stopped being used when it was proven they changed brain chemistry, creating a vast societal addiction that reduced productivity and created generations of people capable of ignoring the world's growing problems. Despite the long-term negative side effects, it's still a computer. I sit down with the device, push the power button, and am surprised when a logo glows on the screen. A memory flashes to mind. My parents sitting in bed, watching a classic movie on the device. It was never intended to be used as a serious computing device, but maybe I can improvise. Galahad.
Yes, sir.
I roll my eyes at the sexless, boring voice. Gal was so much better for a few hours. Attempt to connect to the active device in William Chenoke's quarters. After a brief pause, the tablet displays the message, "Network found," and then, "Connected."
"Device connected," Galahad says. "Several software updates are available for this model. Would you like me to apply them?"
"Negative," I say. Updates often threw old computers into an unstable state. That this thing is working at all is a small miracle. Updating the OS would be akin to clearing a minefield by jumping on them, and the battery life is already at 23%. An update could eat up all of that. There's no way to know how long that 23% will last, even with normal usage. "Can you port the VCCTI to the device?"
"Affirmative."
"Do it." The VCC text interface is the tech jock's last resort, only used when access to a VCC is impossible. It means coding the old-fashioned way, with fingers and text. It lacks the efficiency and artistry achieved by the full-body interface, but it can get simple jobs done in a pinch. The familiar white-on-black text display flashes to life on the screen, awaiting my commands. My fingers hover, frozen in the air like hawk talons. "Where's the keyboard?" "Keyboard," I say with no result. "Show keyboard." I tap the blinking cursor with my finger and am relieved when a digital keyboard is displayed on the screen. The familiar QWERTY layout hasn't changed much since the invention of the typewriter, but the flat digital keys are awkward to use, and they cover up a large portion of the screen, making my window of text small and hard to navigate. It takes me 10 minutes to access the coding controlling Galahad's doors and locking systems. I blink my eyes, which are not used to staring at small text on a glowing screen.
That's when I noticed the battery life displayed in the upper right-hand corner. The level has dropped to 11% in just a few minutes. It seems that while the charge has lingered over the years, the active system is draining it fast. Every line of code I write takes several tries before it's free of typos. Without the tactile feel of a genuine keyboard, I find myself typing extra letters and numbers at an alarming rate. Even more so because I'm only half done and the battery life shows 5%. Slow down, I tell myself, in direct contrast to how I'm feeling. I carefully tap the faux keys, typing like I did when I was 5, but the drastic reduction in speed also reduces my number of mistakes, and I finish the remaining code with 2% battery remaining. Galahad.
Yes, sir.
Upload and apply active devices TI changes.
One moment, Galahad says.
A swirling icon appears on the screen, and for a moment I think it's revealing Galahad's progress. Then I realize the device is automatically shutting down before power is lost. No, I say, standing to my feet and shouting, no! The screen goes black. I rear back to throw the tablet against the wall.
Update complete, Galahad says, verbally subduing me.
It was a small change, but it should give me some advantage. I now have complete verbal control over the Galahad's doors and locks. I can move through the ship unhindered, but will be able to prevent Gal from following, at least until she has her tanks tear out all the doors. But it's an advantage that might help me reach the VCC and give me time enough to purge Gal from the drones. Baseball bat in my hand, I stand before my closed and locked door, mentally psyching myself up to give Galahad the command, but failing. What follows will be violent, probably bloody, and painful. It could end in success, or my very gruesome death at the non-hands of my creation. But the longer I wait, the worse off I'll be. I take a deep breath and say, Galahad, open an active channel to my voice. This will keep me from having to say Galahad every time I want to open, close, or lock a door.
Active channel initiated.
A long breath hisses through my teeth, like a snake warning its enemies away. I can do this. I can fucking do this. Open door. The door slides open. A collection of luminous red eyes spin around to stare at me. Close door. 20. I'm officially a coward. The moment I saw more than one set of red knot eyes turn toward me, I panicked. Really panicked. My heart beats with the frantic energy of mating rabbits, one of the few animals so easy to breed that their meat was still used even after most of the world, thanks to food shortages, was forced to become vegans. While it was a fate worse than death for a few true carnivores, the shift helped sustain humanity for a few more generations. But my knowledge about rabbits and the rate at which they hump will do little to help me now, so I pushed the tangential thought from my mind. I shake out my tingling arms, taking shallow breaths and letting them out slowly. The breathing technique increases the CO2 in my blood, calming my body and mind, despite the small army waiting for me on the other side of the door. How many were there? I don't know. See them again, I think to myself, annoyed with the fear invading my internal monologue. Count them. 10. Maybe 15. But that's it. I scour the memory of my peripheral vision. All the drones were huddled around the doorway, with none lingering to either side. Gal might control an army of drones, but she has yet to send them all after me, which means she either doesn't think I'll leave the safety of my quarters, believes the dozen or so drones are enough to kill me, or is waiting for reinforcements already en route, perhaps pacing the slower engineering robots. Galahad.
Yes, sir.
Locate and report on the location of all internal drones, starting with those outside my quarters.
There are 13 drones outside the quarters of William Chenok. A further 25 are located outside each virtual command center staging room. 87 are located throughout the ship.
Patrolling, I think.
The remaining 278 are located in Engineering Bay 2.
The numbers don't add up. There are 450 drones on board the Galahad. I destroyed one, but the numbers Galahad just reported leaves a large number unaccounted for. Where are the missing 21?
They are not missing, Galahad says. They have been destroyed.
Destroyed? Are you certain?
Quite.
You can see them, I say, remembering that Galahad has access to all the security feeds.
Affirmative. What happened to the destroyed drones? They were disassembled in Engineering Bay 2.
For what purpose?
Several drones have positioned themselves to create a barrier, effectively blocking my security feeds. I do not have enough data to speculate.
I shake my head. Gal would have guessed, and was smart enough to probably be right. She's also smart enough to know I'd probably have Galahad take a peek, so she's concealing what she's up to. Whatever is happening in the engineering bay, it can't be good. I need to reach the VCC before Gal completes whatever she's up to, but that's going to require me to get past my fears and embrace the chaos of war. They can't kill you, I tell myself.
Agreed. I am not alive, Galahad says.
Wasn't talking to you, I say. But then I am.
Galahad plot a course from my quarters to the VCC, avoiding as many drones as possible.
Done. Can you give me verbal directions following that course?
Turn left and proceed 200 feet to the lift. Take it to...
Not yet, I say. Update each step when I'm within 20 feet, and inform me about any drones I might encounter along the way. Same distance parameters, understood?
Yes. Exit the quarters of William Chenoke and proceed left toward the lift. There are currently 13 drones outside the door. The hallway beyond is empty.
Good enough, I think, and I slap the hard bat against my hand. Fending off a single drone, it was more than enough, but 13? Maybe in the hands of a skilled fighter, but that's not me. I can't do this, I think, sitting down once more. I can't.
My eyes turn down to the cushion topping the bed, designed to be both comfortable and firm. I don't have to destroy the 13 drones outside, just get past them. I might not be able to fight for my life very well, but I can certainly run for my life. I stand, unclip the cushion from the frame, and lift it. It's got some girth, but it isn't too heavy. Clutching the cushion and the baseball bat, I stand before the closed and locked door again. I hoist the cushion up, creating a soft, portable wall. 3 quick breaths. Open door. I hear the door slide open and I charge forward. The far side of the cushion takes a sudden, violent beating, but I'm spared from it, feeling only dull thuds against my body. Then there's a crunch and a sudden stop as the cushion and the drones shoved by it all crash into the hallway's far wall. The impact knocks the cushion from my hands and propels me to the floor. Bat in hand, I scramble to my feet as the cushion topples. My eyes shift to the open lift door and the single drone hovering in my way.
Oh, Will, Gal says, mocking. I'm so proud of you. You're becoming such a man.
The drone surges forward, aiming for my head. I lean back and swing with a scream. The bat connects hard with the drone's underside. Blue sparks cough from the repulse disc as a loud buzz fills the air. The damaged repulse disc sends the robot catapulting off the ceiling and then the floor before slamming it into the first of the drones to slide out from behind the mattress. Before more can recover, I run. I don't take a breath until the lift doors close around me, blocking off the 12 drones racing in pursuit. Then, I'm hands on knees, breathing hard. I jump back as several loud thumps resound through the closed lift. The drones beat themselves against the doors. VCC, I say, not remembering the correct floor, but knowing Galahad can figure it out. The lift hums to life.
Proceed directly ahead, Galahad says. 200 feet. You will encounter 2 drones en route.
Before I can complain about the short notice, the doors slide open. I hesitate for a moment, but the first of the 2 drones forces me to take action.
Such a brave little man, Gal says from the drone already racing toward the lift.
She's seeing me through the drone's collective eyes. The moment I stepped into the lift, she knew where to redirect her patrolling horde. The drone clips my thigh as I throw myself to the side.
Was she aiming for my crotch?
I fumble out of the lift and say, close doors. But Gal has learned from her previous mistakes. The drone surges out of the lift, but careens into my swinging bat. The drone shatters with a single strike that caves in the curved hull. It falls to the floor, lifeless.
That wasn't nice, Gal says, spinning me around toward the second one.
It's not racing toward me. It's just hovering at eye level, 4 feet away.
For a moment, I think Gal is going to try engaging me in conversation, giving her army time to arrive. I'm not interested, I tell her, pulling the bat back, ready to swing with newfound confidence in my ability to whack drones out of the air. Instead of replying or attempting to dodge my impending strike, there is a click and a hiss. A cool mist strikes my face, my eyes, and then it burns. A lot. My eyes clench shut as I pitch forward, screaming. She sprayed some kind of industrial cleaning agent into my eyes. I blink, tears flowing, and I see the hallway through a wet rainbow-streaked haze. I'm not blind, but my vision is definitely impaired, and the pain is intense. And then it's worse. The drone slams into the back of my head, knocking me to the floor. I try to push myself up, but it strikes again, this time driving itself into my spine. The pain is massive, but I can still move. I roll to the side, still gripping the bat. The drone, diving to strike again, pummels to the floor instead. I swing the bat around, clipping the drone hard enough to spin it. I swing again, aiming with blurry vision, putting both my arms into the blow. The robot crunches and drops, but it's still functional, trying to pull away. You're not going anywhere, I say, and I vent my pain-fueled anger on the device, driving the bat into its hull four more times, two more than required to disable the device. Galahad, how many drones will I encounter on your plotted course?
7, the AI says, and then updates, 9. 15.
Gal is directing backup toward me. Continuously adjust route to avoid all drones. I need to get off Gal's radar, and the only way for that to happen is to not be seen by the drones.
Yes, sir, Galahad says.
The lift's opening doors spin me around, bat raised to strike. My vision is still fogged, but I can see well enough to know the lift is empty.
Return to lift, Galahad says. Proceed to biotech level.
Biotech level? That's a long way in the wrong direction.
Contact with 2 drones in 5 seconds.
Galahad's update prods me into action. As the doors close, the hum of approaching drones drifts down the curved hallway. The doors close before I see the robots, and I sigh with relief. They won't know if I followed a branching hallway, if I'm hiding in a room, or if I backtracked. For now, I'm invisible.
Not as dumb as I thought, Galahad.
Good work.
Thank you, sir.
The doors open again. I raise the bat, despite the lack of warning from Galahad, and step out. A scent, unlike anything I've experienced before, greets me. That's not true, though. I know this smell. Like the action figure, the scent emerges from my distant past. From childhood. From Earth.
21. I'm in the woods. On vacation with my parents, and with Stephen, my older brother, by just over a year. It's a rare treat. There aren't many places like this left on the planet, and even fewer that people are still allowed to visit. We're among a throng of other ecotourists who seem bound and determined to trample this oasis of the natural world to dust. My brother and I aren't any better. Leaving the marked path, Stephen and I sneak off through the trees, marveling at the world that once was, our imaginations conjuring images of bears, wolves, and mountain lions, visions of carnivores, which exist only in zoos and gene banks, pursue us deeper into the fresh-scented green. Then the smell, poignant and strange. It's not a good smell, but alluring nonetheless. We creep toward the odor, transported from Earth to some strange planet beyond the limits of our young imaginations.
What is it? Stephen asks.
I just shake my head, creeping low like I can hide from a smell or from whatever is creating it.
We should go back, my brother says.
Nothing can hurt us, I tell him, confident that large wild animals really are extinct on the North American continent. He tries a different tactic.
We're going to get caught.
I step forward, pushing past a stand of tangled branches, hints of sunlight drawing me forward.
Mom and Dad will get in trouble too, he says, stopping me.
If we get caught now, they would already get in trouble, I tell him.
Didn't stop you before.
You're just afraid.
I am not.
I just want to see what stinks, then we can leave.
He rubs his hands over his close-cropped hair.
I'm waiting here.
I try a different tactic, stabbing a bold finger toward the unknown depths of the woods and then stealing his catchphrase. Engage. I stand there waiting for him to give in to say, make it so, and boldly go where we weren't supposed to. But he just crosses his arms and puts down roots. I roll my eyes and leave him behind, pushing forward through the poking, dry branches as they do their best to warn me off. My brother, a boy of his word, stands still, wide-eyed and waiting. His bright blue irises stand out, warning signals. He has a knack for avoiding trouble while I have a penchant for finding it. I should pay attention to his instincts. Experience has taught me as much, but as usual, I ignore his caution and press on, determined to seek out new life and all that. I forget all about my brother and his ocular warning signs when I see what's waiting beyond the branches. Beams of sunlight streak through tall pine branches surrounding the 50-foot-wide clearing, made more yellow as I see it through wind-blown dust filtering out of the trees. My nose tingles, but I hold the sneeze back, wanting to see every inch of this place. So far from the path in this threatened patch of wilderness, I imagine that I might be the last person to ever see it. It's a pond, I think. But it's so unlike the images I've seen in books. There are patches of water, but most of it's covered in gelatinous green goo. I pause to take a deep breath. It's the loveliest air I've ever tasted. It makes my head light and my fears dissipate. I'm drawn to the water's edge, perching atop an outcrop of damp earth and long grass. My eyes linger on the water's jiggly surface. Algae, I think. There are vast fields of the stuff growing in military-protected facilities, a last-ditch effort to restore the atmosphere's previously vast stores of oxygen. I didn't know the stuff still grew in the wild. It's not a pond, I realize. It's a swamp.